When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
No Jumper, coolest podcast in the world. And today I'm in here with an absolute legend, Danny Diablo, in the building. How you feeling, man?
Thank you. Thank you for the introduction.
No.
Thank you. It means a lot to me.
100%, man. Like, you're somebody who I always, like, just grew up looking at as, like, wow, that's, like, the fucking baddest dude in the world. I'm going to be honest with you.
Well, thank you. That means a lot, but my music draws a lot of fucked up people.
Yeah, definitely. I was one of them. I was one of them who related to it. I was like, holy shit, this dude is the fucking real deal. But I grew up like outside of Boston.
Oh, that's
so
right.
I'm also looking at you like, you know, you and your bands and shit are like the fucking Yankees. Yeah. Where it's like, okay, this is kind of the other side.
Yeah, other side.
But they're fucking side, crazy.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah. I always went up to Brockton, Massachusetts.
Shout out Brockton, Heart City.
Marvin Hagler, rest in peace. But Brockton was like to us, like Boston was wherever, but Brockton was like hard.
Yeah.
With Cape Verdeans, Dominicans. So, like, I'm from Queens. So, like, it was cool seeing like Puerto Ricans in Boston and Brockton.
Right.
So,
I've seen some pretty extreme violence in Brockton in my day.
Yeah,
it was definitely going down there.
Had a few crazy stuff in Brockton.
And in the stories I heard about Brockton are even worse.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm sure you were wrapped up in some of that. Okay, so take me back in time. You're born in Queens.
I was actually born in Harlem.
Oh, okay, right.
My mother's from Spanish Harlem. My father's from East New York, Brooklyn.
Right.
So my father's Jewish and my mother's Puerto Rican black. You know?
Uh-huh. So. And so, like, what did you gravitate towards first? Because, like, I always look at you as somebody who could have, like, very easily just become, you know, a rap fan, like a sort of rap type person. But then you also were just, like, attracted to the hardcore side of things. Like, what culturally, what did you get interested
culturally,
in first?
Before everything was graffiti.
Really? Interesting.
So it has nothing to do with everyone thinks graffiti's the race thing. Graffiti straight up. It's the street shit. So I was a graffiti artist. But I was into freestyle, you know, like Lisa.
Right.
Shit like that. Lizette Melendez, like you know, Spanish culture music more.
Uh-huh.
Then I got into metal. Then I got into hardcore.
Okay.
So hardcore was like 87. But I was listening to like the Force MD's New Edition and stuff like that.
Right. Know? It was kind of all over the place at that time. There's a lot of influences coming in.
Queens.
Right.
I'm from Jackson Heights, Queens. So the mecca of the world. Most populated, like, different cultures in one area is Jackson Heights and Guinness Book of World Records.
Okay.
So.
Amazing. What was the hardcore shit that you were first drawn to? Like, what bands or what shows?
Agnostic Front.
Okay.
Cro-Mags, Agnostic Front, Murphy's Law. Stuff like that.
When you look back at that, does it feel like, holy fuck, you were just born lucky as fuck to be around for such a crazy era?
When I went to school, I was in junior high school, Jimmy Gestapo's brother from Murphy's Law, John, was in my class, eighth grade, and we stole Jimmy's weed in manila envelopes. This is the 80s, 85.
Right.
So I didn't even know what hardcore was, but we were stealing his weed. Then he became, like, we're like brothers now.
Right.
His older brother's like my older brother, I think so.
Definitely.
So.
And so you start going to these shows, and like, what did you feel like was the thing, like, looking back at your younger self now, what do you feel like it was that just really drew you in there?
The violence.
Really? Primarily, even before the music?
Yeah, the violence. The brother, it's like when a metal band, when you see like Iron Maiden and shit like that, you're in the blue seats, you can't afford it, they don't even care about you. But if you see like Agnostic Front and your CBGBs, you're right here.
Yeah.
And at the end, the singer come up and be like, yo, what's up? You know what I mean? So, and New York City is way different than Boston. It's like, it's all mixed. You know what I mean, most of us are Latino. You know what I mean?
Right.
So people always think it's like a white boy shit. You know what I mean? Like, but we're, it's all mixed and no one cares. You know what I mean?
Right.
So that's the coolest thing.
That's an interesting thing about that. Because, like, I always used to hear, like, when you really look at, like, New York City, like, yeah. hardcore bands, that, like, a lot of them come from Long Island or Connecticut or yeah. Jersey. Because it's, like, if you live in the projects or whatever, it's going to be pretty difficult for you to, like, afford equipment, never mind have a practice space. Like, if you live in close yeah. quarters with people, like, practicing and shit, it's just not going to be that easy.
Also, I think that, like, a lot of dudes, if you grow up in the projects, and you dress like a fucking white boy,
yeah.
they'd be like, yo, what's wrong with you? You know what I mean? Yeah. A lot of kids are like misfits. They find the music to belong to something. You know what I mean? Like some people go do the rave stuff, you know what I mean? Uh-huh. And our thing was hardcore.
That was like the darkest time that I can think of in pop culture, was when it felt like EDM was gonna just take over everything. I was hurt. Like, deep down inside, I was just like, man, did I really, like, invest my whole life being interested in rap music just for this fucking EDM shit to take over, this soulless trash?
It was even crazy. A lot of people in the punk scene became into the EDM scene. Like, what's that girl?
We got to hunt him down and just take him out.
The kid that died, Smack My Bitch Up.
Oh, the dude from Prodigy.
Prodigy. Like that dude's a punk rock guy. But
right.
They did so much drugs and stuff, and they started going to the rave thing. You know
but
mean?
When I look back at, like, I watch, like, documentaries about, like, UK techno and all yeah, that yeah, shit. Like, yeah. that actually seemed like a pretty dope scene that they were, like, super passionate about and stuff. Yeah. Like, I always just, when I'm talking more like the era, like, 2011, 2012, when it started to be, like, all these Vegas EDM DJs are, like, taking over the world, and, like, they're the biggest stars.
Making money.
Yeah. Yeah. That's when it really kind of seemed whack to me.
That's some crazy shit.
But so did you know right away, like, that you really wanted to, like, dedicate your life to hardcore when you first started going to shows like that? Or, like, how did you adapt to this?
At first, it was like music was like, I never sang or anything like that. The first time I did Crown Thorns, I just went in and I was singing to sing the EP, Train Your Blues. And we did that at Rockaway Beach. And it was like going from Queens all the way to Rockaway doing that, and it was like Rockaway's fucked up. So like doing that, singing, then I just it was just natural. You mean like the Scarhead stuff? I was like going on tour. We toured hard. We toured the world at least 10 times over, man.
Right.
So
it is pretty wild when you look back at that. How many, like, there's so many hardcore bands that realistically will just spend years and years and years of touring and not playing huge shows by any means, but just really holding it down.
But in Europe, it's like, I play Europe, it's like we play a tent, it'd be like 5,000 people in festivals, you mean?
Right.
Like, I remember playing, it's like Buzu Banton's in another tent, Destiny Child's over there, you know, the Dilated People's over there, so it was kind of cool, right?
Wow.
So,
but that, is it weird performing to, like, audiences that are almost, like, no percentage, like, traditional hardcore kids the way that you're used to?
The Europeans really love it. It's like Japan, they really love it. Anything underground, cultural, like graffiti, reggae, they love, you know what I mean? So you walk into Japan to be, like, a Japanese roster, or a girl dressed like a homegirl for the Fijis, the Fugees, you know, Lauryn Hill, but she don't speak English. It's really weird sometimes.
When I was in Japan, it was amazing to me that everybody wanted to show me their fucking lowriders.
Yeah. They either do that culture or they want to be like the Fugees. It's really weird.
Yeah. They don't have no concept of, like, cultural appropriation.
No, they
don't. Which is great, I think, because, like, why the fuck wouldn't they do it? On the other side of the world, do whatever you want with all this shit that we came up with.
I went to a club called Club Harlem in there, and I was bugging the fuck out. I was like, just like, what the fuck is going on here?
You know? Yeah. So, but, like, I used to live in Astoria, and there was a spot around the corner called Boston Pizza.
For real?
And I was just like, what the fuck are you doing? This has nothing to do with what pizza is like in Boston.
I went to school in Astoria. I went to junior high school 10 and Bryan High School.
Okay. I lived on Steinway and Broadway for a few years there.
See, what year is this?
2004.
Yeah. Astoria back in the days was ill, like in the 80s.
Right.
All the Vietnam vets went there for low income housing.
Right.
So all the kids went to school with me, and then all the kids, kids' fathers beat them, whatever, all fucked up. You mean so?
Really?
Yeah.
Well, that's a nice ass area now, huh?
Yeah, beautiful now.
Right.
Yeah.
So, okay, when did the term or the acronym DMS begin?
Oh, shit.
Because is that before the bands and shit? I'm going to ask you about this shit more than other people. Because I feel like I have no reason not to just ask you. I'm curious. If you want to take the fifth, it's fine. But no, I'm just going to ask.
I'm truthful. Like, it's people. There was, like, ask me anything. Let's go. So DMS started in 86 as a graffiti crew.
Oh, okay.
So it started with Scotty Banks, who just got out of jail and did 26 years for murder. He's out now. He's retired. And Jeer. So Scotty's black.
Okay. Right?
And Jeer is Irish.
Uh-huh.
So a white boy and a black dude, they started.
Okay.
Yeah.
And it was a graffiti crew originally.
Graffiti crew, yeah.
And it stood for what originally?
Doc Martin Skinheads.
Oh, okay.
So we all mix. Everyone's a different thing. Like, people hear skinheads, they think it's like, oh, in the West Coast, Nazis, everything. We had beef with Nazis. We would beat the shit out of Nazis every fucking day. It was like a thing we did. And we took what when we first came to the scene, the older dudes had a lot of Nazi dudes there. And we fucked them up, and that was it.
They were just kind of like tolerating them being around. Yeah, it wasn't some shit where they were going to really fuck them up.
No, they're like, oh, he's cool, whatever. But we came, you know, we fucked them up, and that was it.
Right.
And a lot of people got fucked up really bad. You know what I mean? Like, so we're street kids, so like we didn't give a fuck. People got stabbed, beaten, hit bats, crowbars, everything.
Were you like surrounded by, like, because people always talk about how gnarly New York City was in general around that time period. Was it like horrible when you look back at it?
All right, from going from Queens on the train to the Lower East Side, which was so fucked, it was like Beirut back then. You mean, no, it's like the South Bronx, no one gave a fuck.
Right.
So going from Queens on the train to the city, going through different neighborhoods, and plus you graffiti, right? So we had beef with everyone. So we had beef with everyone in the 80s.
Right.
So going there, going to the show, leaving the show, you get killed leaving the show just in the neighborhood, Lower East Side. So the only thing in Lower East Side was all Puerto Ricans and punk rockers.
Right.
In the 80s, that's it.
Yeah. Like, I had friends who lived in, like, fucking Sheepshead Bay and shit.
Yeah,
and they were bike riders, though, so they would have to, like, go to New York City, and they're riding their bike through all of it. And they said that it wasn't that bad riding your bike through that area, but then by the time you get to, like, Bed-Stuy, Williamsburg area,
fucked up.
You had to just sprint, pedal as fast as you fucking could. Don't stop at any red lights, because it was like a fucking war zone in that part of Brooklyn.
Well, parts of Brooklyn, like Flatbush, Crown Heights, fucked up. But now the hipsters are moving everywhere.
Oh,
so
yeah.
It's like even the Bronx, they won't go to East New York. East New York's still gully.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So,
for the time being.
If they do, I give them credit.
Right. You know, if they could take that
out. If they
could
take that, like, give them a pass. Let them go, bro. It's like, it's fucked up. You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. So when you were doing graffiti around that time, what was graffiti to you? Was it primarily just like tagging around New York, or were you like piecing on trains? And how far did you take it?
My thing was, I didn't care about anything. I mean, my thing was like just getting up all over the streets. I mean, and beef. It was all beef. My partner in crime was MQDMS, who was the king of graffiti. He's all over the world.
Right.
And we had beef for everyone. And when people saw us, they didn't know what we were. They're like, yo, is Ezek this? Are they white? Or they showed it, but the DMS team really threw them out too.
Right.
So, but we got mad respect in the graffiti world.
For sure.
In the street world, we got mad respect. So, like, that's this is my life. It's not. I don't fake the fun for anyone. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's always kind of hard for me to explain because I have so many friends out here who are like LA dudes who grew up in like the LA gangbanging world, which is so specific. They don't really give a fuck about what people are doing. It's like, it's always kind of weird for me to explain. Like, nah, I grew up going to hardcore shows and they're like basically like white gangs. Not that there weren't other races as well, but it was kind of like the other side of that. And it's like kind of hard for a lot of people I associate with now to like understand that world.
It's, you know what brings that world together? The punk rock. Because like in LA, the Suicidals were punk rock, and the Lads were punk rock gangs. You know what I mean? And Unity, they're still out here. You know what I mean? So like all those dudes, when I came out to LA, I came out here and I started DMS chapter out here in LA.
Uh-huh.
And we got dudes from all different, from State Street, from Clanton, from fucking 18th Street, all retired dudes from there became DMS.
Really?
So, we're pretty big out here.
Yeah, for sure. So, like, all right, when did Crown of Thorns was the first band?
Crown of Thorns, 1993 we started.
1993. Yeah. So you were just a fan up before that, or?
I played bass in a band called Discipline, but the only show we had played Discipline was Boston.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then I played The Rat a few times. But Crown of Thorns was my, like, everyone loves Crown of Thorns. You know?
Right.
So Scarhead is more street shit.
Yeah. Was there like a visible like New York versus Boston sort of feud at that time, or does that take years to sort of prop up?
You know, it's funny because I would go back and forth to Brockton. Mm-hmm. The Boston Mike, who was in Scarhead, is from Brockton. Mm-hmm. I don't know why they call him Boston Mike. It should be Brockton Mike, but rest in peace. We always had friends in Boston. We have a DMS chapter in Boston, so all the Boston cats were cool with me.
I mean, was that always like that, though, that there was DMS dudes in Boston?
95.
Okay. Because when I was going to shows in Boston a lot in, like, early 2000s and shit, it was very much told to me, don't even joke about having a crew.
Oh, because FSU was out there.
Yeah, it was like, just don't even have a crew. Don't joke around about it. Don't fucking make it a little, like, jokey, like, internet thing, because it's just not going to be tolerated. Yeah, yeah, at some point, somebody's going to beat your ass. Yeah.
But it's funny because the head guy, Nathan Elgin Bailey, who, you know, is, like, I met him in 89. We're boys, you mean? So the older FSU guys were always been boys, you mean? Right. There might have been some little, here and there, some little things, beef that happens between crew members. You know, you get two top dogs in the room together, something's going to happen, no matter what.
Right.
So, you know how it is. So the hardcore, they fucked the same girl, or fucking this guy looked at me. It's always over a girl. You know that.
Yeah.
So
there's only so many to go around in hardcore. Yeah,
and you've seen the girls in hardcore. They're fucked up looking. So most of them, you
know, the mosh pit, man. They get their nose broken.
Most
shit.
Of the bitches are fucking fucked up. You know? That's why I got my girl.
How long you guys been together?
How long, babe? It's almost 6 years.
Oh. Amazing.
Yeah, so.
How'd you land her, man? You're pretty grizzled. She looks kind of like a spring chicken in comparison.
It's like this.
Okay, so you, all right, so like at some point you just decided that you wanted to do Scarhead, which to me, like that, I listened to Crown of Thorns a little bit and stuff, but to me, Scarhead was always just like a band that I really fuck with. Cause like my favorite Boston hardcore band is always Blood for Blood.
Oh, for real?
Okay. Just because
I twirled those guys so many times.
Right. I love like the fact that it's more, you know, there's more rhythm to it that like you can
trash rap sings.
Yeah. You can understand the vocals better. It's like, they're like talking about real shit. Like that's one thing I never liked about hardcore is I felt like people's lyrics were just too fucking generic and just sort
stab
of,
me in the back.
You know, it's this bullshit. And I always like that about you guys, that you're like actually putting your lives in the fucking songs and talking about the shit that was important to you. But so what was like the brainstorming behind the scenes before Scarhead became a thing? Like, what was the vision?
No, the vision was, check this out. First of all, it was like basically put together by my manager doing Crown Thorns, Vaughn Lewis. He manages Killswitch Engage, all these bands. And the poor guy used to manage us, and it was like, hell, the poor guy. We gave him hell, man. Mm. We went on tour with so many people, but we would get in fights. We get thrown off tours. We've been thrown off the Motorhead tour that threw us off. And stuff
heard
like
that story, yep.
So it's like, basically when Boston Mike left Scarhead, Puerto Rican Mike came in.
Okay.
And the shit just went too crazy. It was like we were fighting every day. But we would get stopped at every border. So we got detained in Canada twice. I mean, it's like, this is crazy shit.
Right.
So, but Scarhead started in 98.
Okay.
That's it. The first thing we did was in 95, we did an EP, but it was like a project. But we started going on tour in real band in 98.
Okay.
Yeah.
And was like thugcore already term?
Thugcore. No, we created that, thugcore.
Right.
So.
And so, but what was that conversation like about what you wanted to get across through that band that hadn't really been done in hardcore yet?
You know what's fucked up? It was just like our life reflected. That's how we are. You know what I mean? A lot of these guys talk all this shit, whatever. And it's like when usually Scarhead fans love it because we're real. You know what I mean?
Mm.
It's like when you like a certain MC and you're like, oh, he's dope, but I can't, like, I'll slap the shit out of him. So I can't have an MC I love and slap the shit out of him. You know what I mean? Like my favorite MC is Kool G Rap.
Right.
You know what I mean? So you know no one's gonna slap Kool G Rap, right?
Yeah.
But you see all these MCs are hard, whatever, and then once when you slap your face, you see them crying, like, I can't listen to you anymore.
Yeah, I mean, that is kind of a weird thing. It's like, in rap, at least now, it's very much like, if you're gonna be talking tough, if you're gonna be talking street shit, you pretty much have to fucking really be doing that. Because otherwise, it's tough to be out here saying, I'm gonna shoot 10 people, whatever, and you're just not that guy. Like, in hip-hop, your card is getting pulled pretty fucking fast.
And I grew up, we would go to Bill Spector. It's a friend of mine. He used to do these big clubs called Sheets of Pillows. So Stretch Armstrong, Stretch and Barbito, you know, they would DJ, Mighty My DJ, and Mark Ronson, all these guys, famous fucking hip-hop dudes, and we would go there and we'd destroy the fucking clubs. So, but...
Really?
So we were like, most of these rappers, we used to rob the shit out of them. They know it. If you say my name, say Ezek, they'll be like, oh, shit, you know what I mean? Like,
right.
So it's funny. a lot of those rap guys, there's a whole bunch of rap dudes who are real and should be bigger than they are. The dudes, the old school dudes like Royal Flush, Joe Fado, Lars Professor, dudes like that, Strategy Gaddafi, those are like real dudes. I mean, Noriega, those are real dudes, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
They get respect, and that's why people respect them.
Mm.
But a lot of dudes are just like, you know what I mean? I can't get into a lot of rap dudes who's like, don't do it for me, don't move me, you know what I mean?
Right.
So it's good.
But I mean, would you say that that's true of, like, that in hardcore, a lot of the greatest hardcore bands of all time, realistically, were talking like they were super fucking tough and were not at all?
Well, I grew up with the real deal. The Cro-Mags are tough, and Nasty Front's tough, you know what I mean? Like, Murphy's Law, Jimmy's a tough dude, you know what I mean? Sheer Terror, tough, you know what I mean?
Right.
Some of these dudes, Scott Vogel from Terror is my boy, and he loves hardcore so much, and I always tell him stories of the guys that slap in hardcore. He's like, please don't tell me that. Like, but I love telling him that. I'm like, that guy's a bitch.
Breaking your fucking bubble.
Yeah, like but it's funny. Sometimes people don't understand, like, these groups, they're just normal people.
Yeah.
You know? So.
Yeah, but I was a kid looking at y'all like you were the craziest motherfuckers on earth. Like, how are they not in prison, bro? These dudes are out of control.
Listen, Scarhead was touring like we did back then, we'd be in jail like 2 seconds.
Really?
We'd be we would go on the tour and we had Interpol and pull us over and be like, yo, we're looking for so-and-so in DMS, America's Most Wanted. And we'd be like, whatever.
Right.
And we have feds coming to the thing looking for us. Dudes were like, we had people in our team, our family that were on the run for a long time.
So you were getting like pulled over by the cops in New York City as well, and where they were concerned about DMS. This is the whole thing to them.
I grew up with homicide cops coming to our house all the time.
Really?
And my father was a cop.
Yeah.
My father one time made me surrender myself for attempted murder thing, and went in there, and they did me dirty, but fucking everything came up. The two people that so I supposedly stabbed, and the other guy but fucked up, both were actually cool and didn't press charges when it came down to it.
Wow.
So, but still, like those are like, and they were hardcore kids, they're real people, street kids, you know, so.
Right.
But, you know, if it could have gone the other way, you know what I mean?
Did your dad help you get out of a lot of shit at that time in your life?
No, they were hanging the phone. If I got locked up, my father and mother, my mother hanging the phone with me. My mother's a straight Puerto Rican, like, you know, go fuck yourself, you know what you're doing, don't come to me for help.
Right.
So.
When you look at like how you led your life, do you think a lot of it was sort of like a reaction to growing up around your dad being being a cop and having this law and order around you?
Most cop sons are fucked up.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
In New York City, yeah, I know a lot of guys. Like, I know a lot of guys who follow the cops are fucked up.
Because the story of your life is basically like you just ran to all the burning buildings you could find. I'm like, let me just get into all the grimiest shit that I can.
And, yeah, and I was so young, I didn't understand. I didn't understand any of that. Mm. And it's sad too, being at that my age, and not like I should have went to school. Should have got a fucking real job. You mean?
Mm.
I should have went that path, and they should have been like, hey, you'll do this. But my father was kind of cool. You know? Like, he told me one time, he's like, I almost got a tattoo once in the army, and I go, what happened? He's like, we went to the tattoo shop and my friends are assholes. They got tattoos. That's it.
Mm.
He didn't get a tattoo. So he was like, whatever. He goes, if you're going to do something, make sure no one is around there to see what you do. That's the advice for me.
That's great advice.
Hard advice.
It's hard advice to follow in this day and age with cameras everywhere.
Now, yeah, but back then, I'd be like, how do I do that? Just go in the alleyway, hit him with a brick. That's what he said to me.
Really?
Make sure no one's around.
Wow. Damn. When I think about it, like, when I was like, you know, the YouTube algorithm, when you're watching Danny Diablo interviews, it also wants to suggest that you watch all these fucking fights like from every show. Punk rocker gets beat up by skinheads at this show, et cetera. Oh, I'm getting sucked into it. It's like, I got to go to bed. I'm trying to finish watching this shit. And I'm just like seeing all these videos I want to watch in the sidebar. And I'm just looking at these kids and just watching this dynamic play out where, you know, a dude's moshing and he fucking kicks somebody in the fucking head. And that kid obviously walks over and he kicks the dude back. And then him and his 10 of his friends beat
jump
the fuck out of
him. Rat pack.
You know, and then I'm watching it just thinking like, bro, these kids, a lot of them, I think, are like attracted to hardcore because it just gives them a venue by which they can sort of like express the violence that they want to take part in by default. And it creates like an environment where they can kind of do it. And it's not, you know, going to get them thrown in jail like might if they beat somebody up at a football game or something.
Well, that's what I'm trying to say. They go there matinee. All week, you're a kid. All week, you're dealing with your parents and fucking bullshit in school. Get that one day to go crazy.
Mm.
It's like, it's actually... Well, if you go do a football, if you're a football player, you get hurt more as a football player than going to the pit.
Mm.
Think about that.
Yeah, like I you know, when you and it's like you really kind of have to be in it for it to make sense to you, because I remember like at one point not going to a show for a couple of years and then going to a show, I'm standing there and then all of a sudden, you know, the band starts, I'm just watching, all of a sudden somebody's like just spin kicks and fucking hits me in the head and I just am like, what the fuck am I doing here? Like, I haven't been in this environment in a couple of years. What kind of human being would subject themselves to this?
Or I watched them like warm up. I'm like, these kids are fucking retards.
Yeah.
Like, what the hell is going on? Like, it just like freaks me out sometimes. See?
Yeah, because I kind of, part of me can't help but view it from like a normie perspective when I'm looking at a video of a bunch of kids two-stepping and then like somebody's like windmilling around hitting people. And like, I'm with so many people in my life that don't understand hardcore. And I'm looking at kind of from their perspective, like, yeah, I don't know. I don't know what I could possibly say to make sense of this to you.
One time I played the Tramps in New York City, and I brought my mother and my father. Everyone's around my mother. Then after I performed, I was like, oh, my mother's like, oh, Danny, it was great. And I looked at my father. He turned to me and goes, you're not going to make money in this. And he left. I was like, that's all he said to me. I was like, this motherfucker. Like, but I guess he's just, in his own way, he's telling me from the heart, like, you know, like, you know, this is how it is.
But was there any connection in your mind between like wanting to be in a badass hardcore band and wanting to make money, or are these like totally separate things? Because if you're a graffiti kid, I mean, you're not thinking about making money from this. No,
my thing is this. I thought at one point with doing Danny Diablo, I could make money. Like, I was like, all right, I'm going to branch out, mix the hip hop with the rock and stuff. And I got signed by Hellcat. Travis Barker signed me first.
Right.
And then, Tim Armstrong produced my stuff, and it was like.
But that's later. That's not you as like a child.
Oh, child. No, I just wanted. I just wanted to get, go fucking. Like, I was like a Viking. Yeah. Like go to other fucking cities, rape, pillage. And I was like, money. You know, like it was crazy. Fight. It was crazy.
It really was like that.
It was like that. It was like a traveling zoo. That's what it was like.
Yeah. It's just totally not about a business. It's about going out and just having these crazy ass experiences at that point in your life. Over time, you start to look at it I'm going to try to make this work long term.
It would get so crazy that we would be drinking, that we would. Fucking, we got paid in fucking coke, and it was like, yo, just give us fucking 3 8-balls right now. It's like,
right.
It was crazy. In a van, with the dudes that you want to strangle. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So. But dude, so much of the fucking hardcore that I was like growing up around and shit was straight edge vegan shit.
Yeah.
And you guys, you never went anywhere near any of that shit.
No, but a call from Earth Crisis was my boy.
Right.
So we toured together with Earth Crisis all the time, and he would stand in the back and just wanted me to tell him stories all the time. He loved it.
Really?
Yeah. That's kind of cool.
Wow, that's funny. But you never ever try to push him? Like, come on, just do a bump.
No.
He's like trying to push the line.
He's a militant dude when it comes to that shit.
But he wouldn't even joke around about it like that?
No, one time we picked us up, and I was supposed to do go to the studio for him. So he picked me up at a strip club, and I was like, fuck it, me and Puerto Rican Mike. And we're all fucked up, and we made him go through McDonald's to get his food. But he's like against meat and stuff.
Yeah.
But he had
his songs about burning down McDonald's and shit.
So he's in the front, and he had a baby seat in the car in the front, and we're in the back. So it looks like he's ordering for himself.
He probably was like just looking around.
It was before thing. I'm like, yo, we taped this. It was funny, man. Then we went to his house, and we slept in the baby's room or something. We were all fucked up, and we went straight to the studio the next morning.
Right. You feel like you ever like really pushed his patience though? Because as a person who doesn't get fucked up besides smoking weed now, a lot of times when I'm around people who are drunk, I'm just like, bro, I want to fucking smash you over the head with a fucking chair
bro. I hate drunks.
Mm.
It's like, how old are you, bro? I mean, like, to me, it's like, that's the worst thing. If someone's drunk and I'm with my girl or something, and dudes look, I'm going to tell you something straight up.
Mm.
No one gives a fuck about a dude with red hair. They see me red hair. Like, when I have my head shaved and all tattooed, they don't say anything. But I have red hair. People push me. Like, it's weird, man.
Really?
Especially in New York. Like, I have beaten so many people. Like, well, it's so sad because I'm beating with a big red afro, beating some guy in the street. You know,
right.
Dragging him down the block naked. You know what I mean? Tripping him.
Naked.
So.
When's the last time you're going to fight?
Like 2 months ago.
How bad are we talking? A little shutter match?
I got her footage. I'll send it to you.
Really? Yeah. Oh, I'd love to see that.
Definitely.
Was it at a show or?
Something had to happen.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting. So it was like a pre-arranged thing?
Someone taped it and they put the Cure in back in it. They put the, like a Friday I'm in Love. So it's even funnier. It's like someone sent this to me the other day.
Have you got a lot better at not overreacting when somebody challenges you at this point, or is it still an issue?
Listen, if I'm with my lady, if I have to, I'm going in. But the thing is, it's hard for me. Yeah. And that's when people sign me to labels. Like Travis Barker signed me. I love Travis Barker and these guys, but I'm like, it's like a double-edged sword. And like, I could just flip any second. Like, you said a pit bull in the corner, they probably look at me way worse than that. You mean like?
Really?
But Tim Armstrong, same thing. These guys signed me, and I got street credibility, music. But it's like, when you do business, you don't want to deal with that.
Right.
Like, I have a record label. I don't want to deal with a guy who's like a young kid who's going to go crazy and was going to put my money into, could get locked up.
Mm.
You know what I mean? So I think about that. Yeah, I'm older now. You mean? But when I was young, I didn't give a fuck. You could tell me anything. Yeah.
Right.
So.
Yeah, I've probably told this story on the podcast before, but when I went to White Trash Rob's house to interview him his fucking attic in Salem, Massachusetts, which is pretty epic when I look back at it.
Was he fucked up?
No, he was at a good point point. But, you know, he's talking about it, everything. But he was watching the UFC fight that night. And I said, he said something. And he's like, man, like, I could have never done this shit. He's like, these guys are tough as fuck. I'm a fucking pussy. And I'm like, what? I'm like so surprised because I'm like looking at him my whole life. It's like, this dude's hard as fuck.
He's
like, why do you think I always had weapons on me and shit my whole life? He's like, I could have never fought like these fucking dudes. And that just like filled in so much of the shit that I was thinking about as a kid, because I'm looking at dudes like you and him as being the baddest motherfuckers in the world. And it's just very interesting to me to see how the perspective on violence changes as you get older, you know?
You know what? It's also when you look, when I saw Roger and Billy Milano, who I'm SOD, they were like so big and large life. Then I'm like, look at them, bigger than them now. It's like, it's to get older. You know what I mean? But White Trash Rob, always to me, I always thought him as the guy from Cheers on the bar, the knows Cliff, the knows everything. I used to tell him all the time, he's like, hey, he knows every smart dude, man. That dude was a smart guy.
Very.
I know he was fucked up on drugs. I hope he's all right now. But he's a talented dude too, like guitar wise, songwriting. But those guys look at me like an animal. You know what I mean? Like, we would tour those guys, and they'd be like, we would fight everyone, bouncers. Everywhere we'd go, the bouncers would just look at us. They already knew who we were. You know what I mean?
Right.
So I used to wear like pretend glasses and pretend to look different. And be, hey, you know, like, this is so they won't fuck with me. You know what I mean? Like, but it'd be like, yo, fuck New York. And I mean, here it goes. You know?
Right.
So.
No, yeah, I was watching a lot of like old shows and stuff, and just seeing the crowd beating the fuck out of the security, and I'm just sitting there wondering, like, how is this allowed to continue? Yeah, like, why horrible. Would this venue allow this to continue happening when their fucking staff is getting the shit beat out
and
of them?
Some of these, you know, how bouncers are usually tough guys from the neighborhood.
They pretty much got to be.
You have to be. Like nowadays, thank God for like, I thank God for cameras now, because like it puts me a little bit check. So.
That makes sense.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, when you look at the hardcore scene now, like, does it feel the same? Like, how much different does it feel to you in comparison to that magic of? Because you got into it at such an amazing time and lived through so many amazing eras.
I think it's so sad because I love my fans. You know, like the kids, my fans are true fans. I mean, they stick by me. I got the best fans in the world. But some of these kids now, the new kids, are pussies. And I don't know if I can't say what I want to say. And it's sad because I'm not into politics. I'm not like a mixed. I don't give a fuck about anything. If you don't hurt women and children, you're cool with me. You know what I mean? Even like this dude's like, there's mad racist people out there, and they act like snakes. So people look at me that they won't say in front of me, but they'll say something over there. You know what I mean? Say, at least when I look at a Nazi dude, I know why he hates me. So, but there's dudes that do business with me, promoter. That when I leave, like spick Jew nigga. You know what I mean? Like that's the dudes I don't like. You know what I mean?
Interesting. So, but yeah, I mean, when you look at the hardcore, I mean, this is like more me having like an online perspective. But when I look at the hardcore fans these days, sometimes it just feels like, Jesus Christ, you guys all just got into this because you just want to be fucking offended by everything and just talk about the intricacies of what's offending you today and shit. I'm like, bro, this is so the opposite of like what I thought was tight about hardcore when I got into it.
Yeah, no politics. No, it's like, when I was young, you hate the world, man, and you don't understand. You hate your parents. That's why you went to hardcore, get away from everything. Now these guys are like, into politics and talking about stuff. You're like, oh, you said this 5 years ago. Like, what the fuck, man? You're like, it's crazy. I got to watch how the way I speak. But the way I speak, I'm from Queens. I speak a certain way. You know what I mean?
Right.
And that's it. You know what I mean? Like, no one's going to tell me whatever. But some of these people are like, oh, you can't say that. You know, they're like, oh, they think I'm white. And I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about? Like, look at my mother, you fucking retard. You know, like, they don't think I'm like... It's weird. It's weird shit, bro.
That's so crazy.
It's fucked up.
And especially for you, as somebody who's like put so many decades of yourself into working, this. Yeah, so then have people try to question you when you're like, I got a fucking, what, you say your mom's black?
Yeah, my mom's Puerto Rican. Yeah, I mean, that's like crazy.
Come on.
They're retarded, these people.
That's crazy.
Fuck it.
Yeah, but like, I mean, how would you say that your excitement about hardcore has maintained itself? Because I always see like this pattern, like when I was going to shows, where you would see like kids who just go to shows every fucking every day, and they're just doing it and doing it and doing it. But like the shelf life on that feels like it's only so long, because then you have the dudes who are in bands and they start to like actually be doing something productive it, and they kind of become like the elder statesmen of it and stuff. But then those same dudes, I feel like a large percentage of them kind of lose that enthusiasm of just going to shows just to watch.
This is what happens. You perform, you don't get the money or the recognition you're supposed to. And people just like, then you got new kids that don't care anymore, or for other reasons, you know what I mean?
People burn out on it kind of fast because they're not, they realize like, I'm never going to like really have a long-term thing going with this, right?
Or they go to college.
Yeah, just that does it. Yeah,
college and they get a real job. That's it.
What do you think it kept you so fucking in love with it after all these years, though?
The music, the camaraderie, the brotherhood, and just like, what else I'm fucking doing? Become a fucking brain surgeon? Look at me. Either this or I collect money.
Right.
But you owe me money. You owe my collect money for my boy.
You that's mean? What that's what you your mind goes to. Yeah. It's like I would be basically a fucking bounty hunter.
I do construction. But I grew up with people in my neighborhood who are don't laugh at my DMS stuff. They're on another level.
Really?
Of something else. And they like DMS. We make jokes about it, but those dudes. If something goes really bad in my life, I go to those dudes.
Really?
Have a sit down. That's it. You know what I mean?
Oh wow.
So that's how life is. You know? So these guys too. This and that, guns and shit. I don't give a fuck about that, man.
Right. You run around with guns in the 80s and 90s and shit?
I don't like guns. I don't like guns.
That's just an aesthetic.
But yeah, it's all for show.
But whoa, you always have brass knuckles and knives and shit on you back in the day?
I've been stabbed so many times.
Really? That was normal shit?
I just like I got stabbed. When's the last time? I got stabbed, man?
A woman beater.
Oh, a year and a half ago I got stabbed? Some guy was beating his girl, and I stepped in and said, hey, yo, don't do that, and the guy stabbed me up. So the guy stabbed me twice, here and here.
Holy fuck.
So
bad?
Bad. You know, I beat him so bad, but it was so bad, it was fucked up. Then the girl started chasing me, the one I protected from. He was fucked up, his girl, and no one was doing nothing.
And you're that dude who, if you see something going on that you don't like,
stopped it, but
you're getting in there.
But the thing is, my father told me never get involved with a boyfriend and girlfriend fight because they'll turn on you all the time. So, but I knew it, and I'll do it again too. But he was punching, I fucked him up, but it was like the guy stabbed me, I sliced his face. One of my boys was walking down from Lower East Side and he was like, yo, E, threw a fucking box cut at me. I cut the guy in the face, it was fucked up.
Holy shit.
Yeah, so, but. Whatever. Okay.
You didn't end up doing much time throughout your life?
I've been fucking locked up a few times, but never like 2 weeks the most.
Really?
Yeah.
What'd they get you for, like the 2 weeks one?
Attempted murder.
Really?
Yeah.
Can you tell that story?
Yeah, I can tell. So let's go.
It's been a while.
It's been a while, guys. Well, this was a long time ago.
Come on.
All right, so this is fucked up. He's like, there's a dude, I'm not gonna say his name, but he was a fucking hard dude from Brooklyn and whatever. He used to prank my mom's house and stuff like that to talk shit, whatever. And something happened, and I was working as a bouncer at Coney Island High, New Year's Eve. He got stabbed up, he went back home. He was so drunk, he almost died in bed. So but before when he put him in the ambulance, he said my name. So 2 years later, I beat this guy named Nicky X, who's playing guitar for me. He robbed, we were on tour, he was a crackhead. He robbed this lady's house for $50 worth of crack. He sold $50,000 worth of jewelry for $50 worth of crack.
Oh my God.
So I found out, I played a show. Well, Crown Thorns and Suicidal Tendencies. After the show, I was like, yo, what's up? And I beat him down. I broke this dude's shit so bad. And then he went back and got the fucking, I fucked him up. He even got paid for fucking the show and left. I caught him out there, beat him, broke his head at a bar. They locked me up for that. I had to get myself for both of them.
Wow.
So that was it. But that dude is in jail now for killing someone, ran someone over. And he got his neck broken too.
Wow.
So
you ended up having to fight those cases, or how did they go?
They dropped him.
They just dropped him?
Dropped both of them.
Wow.
So, yeah.
You ever feel like maybe you got a horseshoe up your ass? You got a little too lucky in this life?
Maybe, they didn't go for a reason.
Yeah. You were meant to be here.
I'm meant to be here.
Yeah. Were you always also in love with rap, and did you see rap and hardcore as being like competing things, or just things that you just loved at the same time?
I was into rap way before hardcore, and I always loved rap. You know, it's my old school rap. I love like the Large Professor, stuff like that. You know, so like CNN stuff, like 90s, 80s.
Yeah.
MC Shan.
Definitely. But was it always lurking around in your head, like, I'm gonna try to combine these two?
Yeah, started.
Yeah.
But I think Scarhead was more like rock. Dan Diablo was more hard with the hip hop beats, you know, so.
But like, because I know you had a diss song about Fred Durst at a certain point.
Oh, yeah. Oh, man.
But were you. Take me back to Danny Diablo observing new metal when it's at its height, late 90s type shit.
I was just mad at the Yankee hat. If you're not from New York City, you wear a Yankee hat, it bothers me, especially a red one. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, and then the host, I feel bad. Sorry, Fred Durst. I feel bad because DJ Lethal's my boy.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
But when you look back, have you seen him since? Who? You ever see Fred Durst around?
No, but I chill with Lethal all the time.
Okay.
Yeah.
But if you were in the same room as Fred Durst, you think that would. I don't know, it seems like he's probably past that at some point.
No, what's he going to do anyway? Hey, I want to talk to you out there.
Me and Wes.
Oh, hold on a second.
Yo, I remember seeing a picture of him just the other day where he looks like a fucking billy goat or some shit, bro. His hair and his beard, and like he don't look subculture at all no more.
But he has a lot of money. So he's more money than I do, bro.
That's a good point. Yeah. He probably fuck Britney Spears too. That's pretty cool. I'll give him that. But
free Britney.
Yeah, free Britney. No, free Britney. Dude, lock her up. I'm going to get myself in trouble. I keep saying that on here. I just keep waiting for somebody to hear and get mad. But yeah, like from your perspective at that time, though, were you like mortified by nu metal? Like, because this is kind of like a bastardization of these two genres you love, right?
It was fucked up. Yeah.
I was young enough. I was like 12. I was like, this shit is tight. And then within like a year or two, I was like, no, Hatebreed.
Yeah,
fuck this shit.
That's fucking a tour with Hatebreed. Jamie Joshua was my manager at one point.
Really?
And I fucked this. He was not sober at the time. Then he got sober after managing me. So.
And he was like, fuck this. Yeah. I can't manage this guy sober.
This guy's a fucking animal.
What does Danny Diablo's manager do at that point in time? He was just lining up tour dates and shit like that? Or
just keeping me out of jail, bro.
Literally just managing your life, not your career so much.
My life, I mean, he would take me with him. So I would have to go to MTV when he's doing the thing.
Right.
I would wait for him, the Headbangers Ball. It was crazy. But he's Jamie Joshua, I love you, bro. Hatebreed, I love Jamie.
He's someone who's aged very well on this thing. You know, like he's smart. He maximized every part
smart.
Of that shit.
Smart. He's white as fuck too. He's like a white guy. I always look at him like you are like children of corn white.
Yeah. Okay? I listened to a shitload of his podcast years ago.
He's dope.
Yeah, he's killing it. Shout out to him. But all right. So then at a certain point, like what was the mind state behind with Scarhead? You had like a lot of like guest vocalists too, which I always thought was very like
cool.
That was like hip hop influence. Like, but I hadn't really seen it done in hardcore. Yeah. But like, was that like an intentional thing? Like, we're going to kind of try to embed that in the rest of music too?
I thought two vocals, but my thing is Scarhead's more flashy and like more ignorant.
You know,
like you could tell we're Puerto Ricans when we do our music there, the way we are. Like, we are fucking like Puerto Rican Mike was one of the illest rappers in the world, but he did not give a fuck. Like I always say that, like, he would destroy stuff. I was always looking at him and say, you could be so much better. He's like, I don't give a fuck. I'm like, you are definitely a Puerto Rican from the Bronx. You just don't give a fuck. You know, he is the Bronx.
Yeah.
It's fucked up.
For sure.
Shout out Puerto Rican Mike.
So when did the conversation start about Ice Pick?
Jasta.
Real Recognize Real is like.
You like that?
That's the best song ever. That's like actually he the best
she loves it too.
Song in the history of music, perhaps.
Me and Ice-T.
Hell yeah, dude. That shit was, I was shout just out to
Ice-T.
It.
Ice-T, you know, was what, seriously, I love Ice-T and we became friends. Mm. That's my boy, you know, shout out to Ice-T. He, you know, he's influenced me so much. You know what I mean? So like the dudes like that, like that's very rare in our business. They're cool and fucking, I respect. You know?
Yeah. So. Yeah, that's like one thing that you could kind of say about you guys is that like there's been very few people from hardcore that've been able to sort of like cross over to like making rappers understand that what they're doing is tight, and that's like one thing that you guys kind of like were able to get across that I feel like a lot of people have kind of struggled with.
Yeah, it's weird. I think it's very hard. Early days listening to rap rock, it bothered me a lot. It wasn't done right. You know what I mean? It wasn't the organic. It was like always forced to like, so you know, so. But bands like Onyx, I loved it, and MOP does hard shit, man. I love MOP. I love Onyx. I mean, that's hard shit.
It's still like to this day though, feels like people never really figured out exactly
how
it got. You know, like how do we make these two genres work together?
It's a little off. Sometimes.
Some of it's tight. Some of it's like kind of cringy. You know, like well, a lot of it's like really cringy and really hard to pull off. You know. Hard to take serious for sure, but I always felt like Scarhead was one of the best elements of
it. Thank you so much. You make it like it's sometimes like I got so many fans that tell me that, like, oh, yo, your music has helped me out in life. And I'm like, yo, you are fucked up. My music helped you in life. You are fucked up. I don't even, what's going on in your house, bro? You know, like, but I'm saying, but it keeps me going. That's the only thing that keeps me going.
Really?
Because I want to quit the shit all the time.
Right. Let me get the phone. You guys got my phone? Oh, thanks. Down here and shit, but yeah, like, is that's what you would say is kind of keeps you in the game? Do you think that it's just like just your love for it just kind of keeps you from being able to step away from it?
It's definitely love. It's definitely not the fucking money. Yeah? Mm. So, but now as I get older, I'm doing other stuff. I got my own podcast.
Yeah,
I started doing acting now. I just I did a movie with Peter Green.
Really,
who was craziest motherfucker in the world. He was my roommate for 5 years.
Do you end up getting cast as like the gang member?
Which I love doing. So I look like a I dyed my hair last night. I look like a fucking B-movie Albanian bad guy right now.
Really? You feel weird about having a normal color beard? What color was it before?
I'm a redhead. Actually, no one respects redhead, but I look like one of my dyke Puerto Rican aunts with his hair like this. That's what I look like.
Yeah, that's cool. You think nobody respects redheads? It's like one of the few groups it's okay to discriminate against.
Listen, name a redhead person out. Megadeth, Dave Mustaine, asshole, right? Carrot Top, asshole. Ron Howard, who gives a fuck?
Happy Malcolm
days.
X.
Yeah, that's pretty hard.
Does that count? I don't know.
But they killed him. You know what I'm saying? Think about it, right? No one.
Fuck. I know. Sometimes I'll see somebody and their baby has red hair, and I'll just be like, "I'm like,
that's why
they're in for a lot. They got the world up against them, man."
And I never heard the word ginger in my life until South Park, and people, I was like, "What the fuck's a ginger?" Because someone said, "I'll fuck you up. Don't call me a ginger. What the fuck's that?" You know?
That must have been crazy.
You know, that's why I fought all the time. Because people are like, "Yo, look at your mother. Your mother." They'd be like, "You're adopted. Your mother's a nigga. You Jew. You speak." I'm like, "What the fuck?" All areas they're hitting me. You know what I mean? So like, I had to fight everyone.
You know what's fucked up too is that ginger and the N-word are the same letters, just rearranged. I played too much Scrabble in my life that I can't help but think about that. But
I never thought about that in my life, bro.
That's just like a weird coincidence that I don't really understand. But that's weird how like that was like invented to be a slur for redheaded people, but like late in the game, like halfway through my life, I find out about that.
That's fucked up. People are fucked up.
Right. When you diss Fred Durst, you rhymed puddle of mud and puddle of blood. I thought that was pretty fucking righteous.
Thank you. Where do you even hear that shit?
I just went on YouTube and I was just searching Danny Diablo, and by the time you get to like page 3, there's some shit.
Oh, what else? Come on, don't even tell me what to say.
Nah, I mean, there's a lot of good stuff on that. I'm watching all these old performances and shit. You ever do that? You ever end up in the wormhole looking at your old shit on YouTube?
You know what my girl does to me now? She goes, don't, people in the comments, well, I got a lot of people fucking like be down, whatever. And I look at the comments, it just bothers me sometimes when people talk shit. like I can't do anything about it. It fucking kills me inside.
Mm.
So I know people fucking right now they're probably like, fuck you now. You know, like, but the thing is like, but then I look at other people, other rapper stuff, and I'm like, oh my god, the kids nowadays destroy people.
Mm.
Like I look at Fat Joe shit, and Fat Joe is a real motherfucker. Mm. You know, Fat Joe's, I'm telling you right now, a lot of these kids don't know about Fat Joe. He's real. And they'd be like, you fat fuck. I'm like, oh, shit. You know what I mean? Like, they would never say that to him in front of his face.
No, and but that's like a very good sign of how internet fluent somebody is, because like my guy Wack 100 is like one of the most certified like OGs in LA, and he will be in the comments and somebody calls him a bitch, he's in the comments saying, well blah blah blah, your mom did this, and like it's like he's still kind of in that mentality, like he's spending all that time in prison.
I don't want to get into that whole weird shit, because like it's like I understand some of these people are like, then I realized like you know who taught me a lot about that stuff? Necro.
Really?
Necro's my boy. You know, so shout out to Necro. He was like, how many people you beat down in your life? How many guys, girlfriends you fucked? Or to beat up their cousins? They can't do anything to you, so they're going to get at you this way.
Right.
Don't let them get at you.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, thank you, Necro.
Yeah, I mean, there's been times where, you know, somebody said something really nasty about me, and it's like, I don't know who this person is. It says they're from fucking Kansas on their profile.
Does it bother you?
Sometimes, like it's tough to get through to me at a certain point. Like somebody calling me racist, it's like I don't care, whatever. Like you know, I've seen it too much. You know,
I'm saying like these motherfuckers will say something about my son or my girl.
That's it.
And I'm like, I'll kill everyone up in here. But the thing is, like, look at them. You gotta be a loser to be on to even make comments on a fucking YouTube thing.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying?
But like when I see somebody saying something about my kid, it's like, I can't get that mad because I know I'm never going to see that person in my life.
Right now,
but then I'll be on Twitter and I'll click the fucking like button and I'll see somebody like the tweet, and it's like somebody who I know lives in LA. It'll make me want to fucking drive. It's like just the fact that they're like adjacent to me and that they feel like I'm not going to do something. And you're right. I'm sorry. I'm not going to do anything because I just have too much to lose at this point. But it still just makes me fucking steal.
I don't have to do anything. I got 500 people that will do anything I say. And I don't even try like that. But I enjoy when I see someone that has a problem, they say something, I know they can get away from something. Mm. I enjoy smacking them in the fucking face and popping the eardrum in front of everybody and walking away.
Yeah. That's going to be a good feeling.
They're even bouncers too. When they all over, they say something. The first time I took my girl to Kansas City, the bouncer said something. I said, "Yo, go over there, slap the shit off, bah!" You know, in front of me. He was like, "Oh, I'm sorry."
You didn't want her to see it, or
no? I said, "Go." She was like, and she just ran. I was like, "Oh, cause she's down."
How many years younger than you is she?
I'm gonna be 50 years old this year. Uh-huh. She's 29.
Oh, okay.
28. I'm sorry,
baby. Is it hard for her?
21 years.
Is there a lot of shit that she has a hard time understanding about how much shit you've been through in your life?
No, she knows everything.
Really?
Yeah.
It doesn't seem kind of foreign to her at a certain point of how much. No.
She chills hard like my people. That's my love. So my brothers treat her like a sister, and they you know, like she's like she's always protected and she's fucking and respected. So
right, yeah. So sometimes like especially a lot of the hardcore shit, it feels like trying to explain some of the violence that I've seen and just crazy shit at shows and stuff, and like so many people who are like a lot younger than me just have no fucking frame of reference for what I'm talking about. I feel like I'm from another fucking planet at a certain point, because they're just not going to be able to wrap their head around why these things happen. You know,
well listen, the hardcore scene is very violent, but the world is very violent. You know what I mean? You go to Israel, you go to fucking Palestine, you go anywhere in the world, it's fucked up. You know what I mean?
It's true.
We got the Americans. We got it easy compared to other people. Mm. You know what I mean? So I mean, when I go around the world and I see people with like real projects or the real people are fucked up, I'm like, damn, these people are eating potato soup. You know what I mean?
Mm.
You go to projects by my house, and my Queens guy has a Range Rover in front of the project. That's all I'm saying. You know what I mean?
It's real.
So
definitely. How's it feel being 50? I'm 37 and I feel fucking ancient, so I feel...
You know why? I don't slow down. I'm still act like a kid, you know, but when I wake up sometimes, I'm like, what the fuck's going on?
Yeah.
You know, like I'll cough, my back will go out, I'll be like, the fuck, you know, shit like that. Mm. But, you know.
Sometimes I just feel like I've lived a couple of lives now at this point, because it's just been like so long that I've been kind of doing the same types of shit. Like just, you know, like I feel like you've got to feel that way in a certain way too, where so many of the people that you deal with on a daily basis just they weren't around fucking 10, 20 years ago. And like, they're getting to deal with this version of you. You missed out on this whole saga that was my life 10, 20 years ago.
That's why people want me to write a book. And I'm like, I'm not going to do it till my mother passes away, because if, I don't want her dying watching, reading the book about me.
You think she would be that mortified?
Oh, it's my poor mother. She's like, whenever the cops come to my house, she goes, my Danny would never do that. And I'm like, shout out to my mom.
Right. Yeah, the mom's always...
Oh, she's the best.
They keep an idealistic view of their kid, right? My mom just don't even want to ask, you know?
She's my mom's such a good person. Right? Just like, I'm always making jokes of her.
Definitely.
She's a good person.
For sure. When you were just in Vegas, I just seen, like, your caption said, like, we're just out sinning. And I was just wondering, like, what's a wild night out for you at this point?
When I first met her, we were partying all the time, you know? Right. But now it's like, I'm me. I'll still fucking, we'll go crazy, you know, whatever. But, like, I'm trying to, like, smoke a lot of weed now. But there'd be times I still sniff fucking a whole bunch of coke and fucking go to strip club with her and fucking go buck wild. You know what I mean?
Really? That's good. That's good to hear, man.
I can't stay young. I'm not gonna lie to fucking everyone. I love strippers. I love my girl. I love cocaine. I love whores. I love fighting. But that's part of my life.
Okay? I fucking love
that's
this
it.
Guy.
I'm Puerto Rican. I'm dirty, grimy nigga. That's it. I don't give a fuck. You know what I mean?
Fuck yeah.
Am I gonna lie?
That's sick. I mean, okay, that comparison, though, like, I just think, because part of the conversation I had with Rob when I did that interview with him is he's talking about how he was, like, keeping his heroin addiction a total fucking secret, going to different towns with bands, asking them, hey, what's the worst part of town, and just pulling up to
That's a problem. I the worst I want to do, me and my girl, like, yo, where we get some blow ecstasy and fucking what's the best strip club? You know what I mean? We go around the world, you know what I mean?
Right.
You know, we party around the world. I party with the gangsters. We go everywhere. You know what I mean? Chile, fucking France. I took her to her birthday to Paris, France for her birthday when I first met her. Like, you know what I mean?
That's fire.
And when I play Europe, I'm treated like a fucking big celebrity. It's crazy. Like, I'll walk down Santiago, Chile, and be like, Danny Diablo, you know, like, messenger. You know, so it's funny.
That's sick. Yeah. I mean, but at a certain point, you ever feel like you might just have to lay off the partying altogether because you just.
You know what's going to happen? One day I'm going to be stuck in a hotel for fucking. Be like,
yeah, that's what I worry about with myself. Like, I haven't done coke or anything in years. But
I would be like half naked, and people take pictures, and my dick's going to be out. My mom's going to be like, oh my God.
That's how you want to go? You got to write the book. Bro, write the book. You don't have to put it out. You can wait on your mom, but write the book now
I've been writing the book. It's I've been putting stuff down. There's a lot of funny stuff that people would not. A lot of people don't understand that I love making jokes. I don't want to fight anyone. My thing is, I'd rather have fun and laugh and make, you know, just have a good time. You know?
Right.
But, you know, violence was just a way to say how I grew up, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
The only person that ever broke my nose was my father, you know what I mean? Really? So my father was a cop, but my father was the first person I'd seen a buck 50. He had a total bullet slice his face when I was 3 years old.
Right.
You know, I seen my father play a basketball game. The guy was fouling him, pulled his gun out, put him, do that shit again. And I was like, Daddy? You know, I was like 3 years old.
And this is while your dad was a cop?
I was a cop. He's probably like bad lieutenant.
Different time, man. Different time when there's no fucking cell phones around.
Hey, come here.
Holy shit.
Yeah, so I'm saying, but my father taught, he was the hardest man, right? He wasn't that big, everything, but they.
I mean, seeing your dad do something like that at 3 years old, that all of a sudden, it's like, I don't need any further explanation of why you sort of ended up attracted to violence.
But before that, all I did was play basketball. My father played for Brooklyn Tech High School, played for Brooklyn College, and he also tried out for the Knicks, my father.
Wow.
When he was there. So I played basketball my whole life. Then I got into hardcore and women destroyed my life.
Really?
Yeah. That's because the drugs came in and all that shit. So, but I'm happy now.
You blame the women for the drugs?
Thank God for the women with the drugs.
Right.
Yeah. Not just doing drugs and no women.
That's what I'm saying.
That's whack.
Yeah.
You know, you ever see a guy, like, if I'm hanging out with you right now, right? And we're doing coke. I don't want to talk to fucking. If I do coke, I'm the first bump. Like, I don't want to be a fucking whore. So I'm like, I don't want to hang out. I don't be like, hey, the stock market is great. I'm like, get the fuck away from me. Come here.
Yeah. That's Dude, I know dudes who pop ecstasy just to hang out with the homies.
Like, I'm like, the Guido dudes.
That's some
like,
weird whatever, shit to me.
Like a Guido guy with a ring light. Like, yeah. Like, whatever. I'm not down with that.
Anytime I put a drug on my nose my entire life, the purpose was to then kick it with some girls,
yeah,
bro.
That's like, how it was.
I would, if I'm going to be staying home in the house by myself, I'm not going to do the drugs. Like, I'm just not. Like, what's the point?
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, and that's the best thing about coke. You might be able to keep your fucking dick up for 6 hours that night. But you got to really do the right amount of coke.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I've definitely done too much coke that there was no fucking taking place.
Yeah,
dark times. Hard times.
Look out of the blinds, like, what the fuck's going on?
Right. You just reminded me, like, I remember being on tour with my friend's band, and, like, I was, like, 19, so we're talking, like, I'm, like, 2003, 2004, or whatever. And, you know, I meet this stripper in Virginia, and she got fake tits, and, you know, I seen her in a tattoo magazine after that. She had the word cum tattooed on the inside of her lip. But then I'm kicking it with her, and she's, like, name-dropping, being like, oh, I'm kicking it with these DMS dudes, yada, yada. And I'm just like, fuck. Like, I'm really like, damn, like asking her mad questions and shit. Like, what do they do? Like, what's it like? You know? And I'm like, she's got this like insider perspective that I wasn't going to find at that time. You probably ran through it too, man. I wouldn't be surprised. You know?
Oh, man.
That'd be cool if we were Eskimo brothers. I mean, we got to be. Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, crazy.
When you think about what you want to accomplish at this point before you fucking kick the bucket, like what really stands out to you that's the shit that you want out of life
right now? I just want to I just want to be comfortable and fucking basically be more secure in life. Like I want everything's a goal to get the things I want in life. I want a big house. I want to get married, to have kids with her, fucking just like but it's still, like, I'm 50. I still want to go on the road and just, it's in me. Like, I don't want to get out there. Like, I want to perform. I'm playing this Saturday doing the Hood Horror Fest in L.A. It's, like, all Mexican punk rock shit.
Really?
Yeah.
On Saturday. Can I pull up?
Okay, pull up, please. Come down. Okay. It's crazy. It's all, like, Mexican hardcore bands. Like S.A. bands. And I'm doing Danny Diablo set. And also, I'm coming out doing, like, three Scarhead songs.
Sick.
So it's gonna be cool.
That's badass.
Yeah.
Fuck. Was COVID the longest that you've gone without touring?
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
You feeling a little stir crazy?
Yeah, but I performed at Tom Square Park.
Okay.
The crazy thing that was, people got mad, it was during the COVID thing.
Yeah, I saw it.
Like 3,000 people. I performed Murphy's Law. I came on stage and did Sit Home and Rot.
That must have been rough for the perpetually offended hardcore fans out there.
They were so mad. Brooklyn Vegan, all these people. They were like, they were so upset. I was like, yo, grow some balls and stop. It's like, and then 2 weeks later, it was no one got COVID at that show. Yeah. That's the thing. 2 weeks later, the mask thing was gone.
If you got vegan in the name of your publication, I automatically don't give a fuck about what the fuck you're talking about. I'm going to be honest with you.
Yeah, these guys are all, they'd be like driving, they're like talking on a thing. It's disgusting. I'm like, yo, you're not even watching where you're driving. You're going to kill someone. Like, these people everyone's pussified. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, people need to get smacked in the face to understand that this could really happen. You know what I mean? That's why people just talk. Like, I grew up, if I'm going to say something and offend someone, I'm going to get fucking punched in the face or stabbed or shot. Right?
The culture mirrors the dominant form of communication at that time.
Yeah.
So social media has like Twitter-fied everything.
I understand, you know, because like especially our women, how they look and what they do and everything. Like my girl has a career and everything, and they say shit, and I'm like, oh, I'll fucking kill you. You know what I mean? Like, they think people are trying to get your weakness.
Mm.
And, you know, I don't like that, man. Like, I would never do that to someone.
Mm.
I would never say something to the girl. It's like, what the fuck is wrong with these people? They're not, to me, that's how do you look in the mirror every day you wake up? You're such a bitch.
Mm.
That's all.
That's a lifestyle.
That's foul.
You know what it is? Is that there's a lot of social currency to be gained.
Yeah.
From being that person who's being offended and calling that shit out, you know?
I would love to, like Silent Jane, Jane, Silent Bob, and find everyone.
Where they drive around.
I would go to everyone's house and light them on fire. Pour gas and just light them on fire. Cigarette,
I support that.
Yeah, see? That would be a cool video, right?
I remember, like, bro, going to shows in like
Death by Fire
2000 and like hearing about dudes get beat up for shit that they said online. Yeah, and it was like, whoa, like technology is real. Like this shit is actually going to end up with people getting beat. Like now that's, I mean, how can you be, people get killed all the time for shit that they said on Instagram Live now and rap and shit. And like
the rap thing is even crazy growing up. Like I watch all this crazy stuff in rap.
Yeah.
I just talked to this guy. All right, check it out. Celebrity Boxing just hit me up. They're talking about the Stitches.
Stitches?
I was supposed to box him.
I love this idea. This is the best idea.
No, you didn't hear about this? 5 years ago, I was supposed to, 2017, babe, what was it? 2016, Celebrity Boxing wanted me to fight Stitches. And I was like, oh, man, I don't want to do it. I kind of like his music. It didn't bother me. So he would not do it. And my fans were going, the hardcore kids, like, fuck you, fight Danny Diablo. And he called me up, and he wouldn't do it. He's like, nah, I'm not doing it. So but right now, 6'9", it might do Celebrity Boxing. The guy hit me back. What do you want to do? I was like, 6'9"? Come on, bro. That's not, you know.
You couldn't fuck with him?
I would smack him so hard.
I know. I was like having a hard time even imagining what that would look like.
And I'm 49. I'm going to be 50 years old. That kid's like 20, what? I'd still kill him. Like, one arm be on my back. I'd kill that guy.
Yeah. I mean, you've been through it. You've probably never been in a fight like that.
But it'd be pretty cool to fucking smack the shit out of him. You know what I mean? How many people for snitching? You mean that'd be fucking nice.
You want to get immediately, universally applauded by hip hop? I'm telling you, Danny Diablo have a moment in rap.
Yo, I'm down. Celebrity Boxing, hit me up.
Amazing, dude. All right, is there anything else that you got like on the way right now? Anything that you want people to look out
yes,
for?
Yes, I got Diablo's Den podcast is my podcast.
Yeah, I didn't get a chance to listen to any episodes yet.
I gotta get you on that.
Let's go. That'd be fucking fun as hell.
Also, I got Scarhead has a new record dropping on Force 5 Records called Generators of Violence. Hard. It's like the first EP. So fucking hard. We did the songs in 3 days.
Wow.
So it's coming out. Force 5 Records. Donnie, that's the owner of Force 5 Records, my manager. I got a new video called Guidos and Irox that came out.
Yeah.
My girl hates it.
They used to always tell me growing up that Irox stood for Italian retard out cruising.
Yeah, they did. But I just had a video release. We played on the thing, and she was there. She's like, oh, fuck you. She's giving me head during the thing. I'm on a coke. The video is like, it's fucked up. But I also got my group Spick.
Okay.
It's me, Big Lito, and Joe Fado. Joe Fado's in Live at the Barbecue with Nas.
Oh, wow. Okay.
He's the one that put the G, him with G-Rap, main source. Joe Fado is one of the first, like, he's the fire, you know, that's my brother from Queens. So me, Joe Fado, and Big Lito. Big Lito's Dominican, Joe Fado's Puerto Rican, and I'm Puerto Rican. So it's called Spick, Spanish People in Control.
Okay.
We put a record out on Devil Rats Records in France. Uh-huh. And also I got an album out called The Triz. And it's on Force 5 Records, hosted by DJ Koz, who just got a stroke. Shout out to DJ Koz, my brother, my DJ. He's a little fucked up. Hope you feel better. Keep the Trizzy alive. And that's it. I got mad people on it, but that's it. I keep on doing music. And GLD Casting Company with Chubby God and Lord Jewish. I took all my hardcore stuff and we flipped them and made beats.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm sampling my own shit. It's hard. So
wow,
I keep busy. Just look, Google my shit, go on my YouTube page, subscribe, and all that shit. You know, whatever. But I'm Instagram, and that's it, man.
Danny Diablo.
Thank you, brother.
Legend, bro. Thank you.
Yo,
it was a big
Adam,
honor.
Thank you so much, brother. Thank you. It means a lot to me, man.
Yeah, for real. I mean, honestly, the fact like I grew up looking up to dudes like you and you in particular, and like just to have you being so hyped to do the podcast made me super fucking like, wow, this life is gone crazy.
You know how fucked up this industry is, you know what I mean? Like, it's a lot of people like, oh, you're my boy, everything. I know dudes who I protected in hip hop and everything, and the fucking, it's like, it's an honor to meet you. You know what I mean? Like, it's cool. Because I come from, like, I grew up with dude like Elliot Wilson, I grew up with Sasha Jenkins. Yeah.
What happened to your band with him?
I don't know. but Elliot Wilson grew up with me too. So we all grew up together, man. But the thing is this. It's always good to see someone who has the heart of you and the realness of you.
Appreciate it, man.
And I look up to you when you're doing your podcast, and I want to do my podcast. Pretty soon, I got to grow up a little bit. So once I hit 50, I want to chill a little bit and just like try to do like a TV show or something like that.
Interesting.
That's all.
Yeah. Oh, you're a ball of creativity. Wherever that energy goes, something good is going to come out of it.
Thank you, brother.
For sure. Thank you, my man.
My man.
Appreciate you.
Much love and respect.
Danny Diablo, No Jumper. Check us on YouTube. Patreons are on the screen. Like, comment, subscribe. NoJumper.com if you want to support. And we'll be streaming your music on Friday. Appreciate you, man.
Thank you, brother.
Much love.
Thank you.